The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So, lads, the Munster hurling snobs have gone very quiet. It's a 12-point average winning margin. I think the Munster hurling championship is the most one-sided in either code, hurling and football. So they're going to have to stay very quiet. Hurling snobs are one thing. Munster hurling snobs are a different breed altogether. So it's all about the Leinster Championship now, JJ. Like, I mean, that's where the draws are happening. That's where the close, exciting games are happening. It's been some turnaround in 1 year.
It's been huge, yeah. And that's down probably to the resurgence of Dublin there as well. They're actually coming on leaps and bounds the last 6 or 8 months. And the guys now, the new management team over, they have to take huge credit for that there as well. But I suppose the first game against Kilkenny, Dublin very unlucky now not to win that one. But the draw against Wexford really set it up there as well. And everyone, unfortunately, the Beck Harlow fairly well, every team as well. But yeah, next Saturday night, it's going to be huge. You know what I mean? It's down to the last game. And there's one team out of four playing their next Saturday night that won't go through, you know. So Someone's going to play their last game in the championship now next Saturday night.
There's a lot of permutations. I'm going to hold them off for Wednesday's show. We're not going to go through them too. Last time Kilkenny were beaten in Nolan Park, JJ, when?
70 years ago.
Yeah, but do you know the actual date and by who?
No.
Brian, do you?
No, 49 was it?
Yeah, 1949, well done. Cheddar Plunkett sent me a text last night. Leash beat them in the Leicester final in 1949.
I should have seen that coming, will you?
We should have had to get that an old mention on the show. Come here, talk to me, JJ, about this controversy at the end of the game, because I was in Croke Park yesterday. I didn't actually see it, so I'm kind of going off the Sunday game and going off Brian Cody, what he said. So 2 minutes of extra time. There was four minutes of extra time, but 2 minutes were taken up over a TJ Reid free.
TJ Reid, he had a free. Everyone thought it was a 21 because he got fouled. Colin Finley got fouled, and then he went on again. He got fouled closer to the 21-yard line. So that, and David Bourke hit Richie Latty at the end of a hurl. Richie Latty went down. David Bourke went into the line, or the referee went in, called David Bourke out, gave him a yellow card, went back, and all the Kilkenny forwards were outside the 21. So once 21 yard free, the forwards can go in there. Outside the 21, the forwards can go in there. So the confusion there for another 30 or 40 seconds, and then TJ took the free. There was exactly 2 minutes between when the referee blew the whistle and TJ struck the free there as well. And he only played, he had 4 minutes injury time, and that 4 minutes was in 35 minutes of play. So he should have played a minimum of 4 minutes. But in that 4 minutes, there's 2 minutes took up from that free. Yeah. And he only played around 20 seconds over the fourth minute.
Just about, because it wasn't like Conor Whelan kind of knocked it out of play. Yeah, and maybe that made the ref's mind up for him. Because Conor was like, if when it goes out, it's over. Yeah, but it wasn't.
That's if the ball was in play for the 4 minutes.
Injury
time. But it wasn't. Exactly. The 2 minutes were gone, you know. So you feel very aggrieved. The way Kilkenny were going at that particular time, you think they would have got another score with that as well, you know. So it's just it's a lot of confusion. But I didn't think he had a great game overall anyway, to be honest with you. You know, but that really kind of put the icing on the cake for the Kilkenny fans, anyway, to be fair.
Yeah. Brian, I know how you would treat this situation. You would all walk out of the stands and you'd sit down in the middle of the pitch.
No, we have form in that, and it worked, it did work.
Were you sitting on the pitch in Croker by any chance?
By God, I was. I was only 15 at the time, and I remember a couple of people going out into the field and calling everyone out of the stands. That would have been the new Cusick stand at the time, and everyone was kind of looking at them first, going, "What a yacht!" But lo and behold, the people started to trickle out. It became a flood, and out into the field, chanting and singing songs, and it was brilliant. But what afterwards of that is actually poor old Kildare and Kerry, I think it was, were due to play in an under-21 All-Ireland B All-Ireland after the game. So they were waiting in the tunnels in the old Hogan stand side, and they were ready to come out. So I think the Kerry lads came out, and I remember a few lads from Wicklow, alone at the hurl and slip Rothman, were poking balls over the bars so to be able to tell everyone at home that they scored a point in Croke Park. So the same lads with the hurl saved their lives, but so they were able to tell everyone they scored. So, great day. I remember that so fondly. And it made for a great summer, obviously. It's one of the best championships. Well, we'll definitely say it was one of the best championships of all time in 98.
Yeah, fairy tale stuff for a 15-year-old. There's no question of this being like. There's nothing. You have to move on now, JJ, because there's a game next weekend.
Next weekend, yeah. Look, Mir, if Kilkenny qualify next weekend, there'll be nothing about it whatsoever. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? But it could be a costly decision out near the end, you know? Like,
with the momentum, you'd have fancy Kilkenny in two minutes, right?
2 minutes, yeah. They're on the crest of the wave and they're going attacking, and Galway kind of sitting back defending their leader as well. They weren't going attacking their lead as well. So, yeah, it's frustrating from Kilkenny point of view now, but again, there's a lot of positive for Kilkenny there as well. They die with their boots on again, and it's one thing when you're playing Kilkenny now, and you'll be proud looking at the guys now out there yesterday as well. When you're going to have to beat them 75, 76, 77 minutes, let's say, coming at you, you're going to have to, you've got to win against Kilkenny. This Kilkenny team now, you'll learn it.
Yeah, no, you definitely will. They definitely have that. We'll talk about that. We're going to focus on that game in part two. But, like, I mean, Brian, I want to throw this one to you because there was a lot of cynicism from Galway and they were pulling Kilkenny down and trying to stop their comeback. And there was, like, let's be honest, there was black card offences. Now, I know hurling people are allergic to this because it has caused a lot of messing in Gaelic football and too much analysis about it. But at the same time, some sanction has to come in for cynical play towards the end of a game.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of it from Galway, and actually Robert Downey did it for Cork as well against Waterford the other night. A lad was going in by him and he clipped his ankles with his hurling. We've seen that starting to creep into the game now. It was done, what, the Tipperary, I think, did it as well. So it's not nice, and I know JJ will say from the other end, from when he's down, you stop a goal at all costs, but it's becoming prevalent now at this stage, and I think there's going to have to be something done over it, about it over the next probably season or two. But hurling people will be slow to bring in these sort of rules. You'll definitely hear the likes of Brian Cody going absolutely crazy if they even think about it. As far as he's concerned, we'll get rid of cards altogether. but you know, it's the cynical things, I think, is the things that are really, there's no, you'll gladly take your yellow card and move on, like, and you know, sure, he's no choice but to tap the ball over the bar, and that you're stopping clear goal scoring opportunities. I don't know, and if we don't introduce a card, I think there should be probably more of a punishment, that maybe it's a if it's a professional foul, for want of a better term, that it's automatic penalty or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's because it was Billy Ryan was pulled down by Pádraig Mannion, and TJ Reid was pulled down, and then Hart tripped Aylward, which ended up getting Aylward sent off because he reacted to it. A trip should be, that's cynical too. He couldn't rejoin the play. Like, I mean, I think maybe. See, referees are struggling to determine what's cynical, professional, and what's not. That's the problem in Gaelic football. The actual principle of the punishment is right.
The three of them, probably the worst one, well, the best one from a Galway point of view was Pádraig Mannion. He just held on to Billy Ryan's hand because Pádraig Welch was free on the 14, 10 yards out. And if Billy had got his hand free, he was just hand passing, and Pádraig had a goal chance. And you'd have fancied his chances at 14 yards out, one on one, he would have scored it too, you know. So from a Galway point of view, absolutely brilliant. You'd be patting Pádraig Mannion on the back for doing it, you know. But again, yeah, it's a yellow card, but is it that punishment enough for it? I don't think it is, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Again, what Brian's saying would be 100% right. If it's a goal scoring opportunity and you take someone down cynically like that, you should have an opportunity to take the shot at the goal with the yellow card there as well. Like, you know, but how you bring that in and how you sanction it, is it inside the 21 when you bring someone down? Will it be a penalty then? All right, you know what I mean? But then again, the situation, Billy Ryan was outside the 21 yesterday as well. Like, so it's very, very hard to determine.
But it's a conversation that needs to start,
it does,
right? Because instead of just saying,
there's nothing there for the referee to go against at the moment.
No.
Just give yellow card, that's it. Free yellow card. Letter of the law, referee's doing the right thing. But again, if you were, again, the Kilkenny's point of view, we had a goal scoring opportunity. We got a point out, fair enough, all right, but we had a goal scoring opportunity. A goal at that point and that situation in the game would have been a huge score for Kilkenny.
Yeah, the red cards were interesting enough. Like, I mean, I thought Paul Murphy probably had to go for the persistent fouling. Yeah, like, I know he couldn't really have gotten out of the way, but he did wrap the hands around, you know, and like, I think Concannon really played for it now as well. He bounced back off him to make it look worse.
Yeah. I think the referee, in fairness to him, said that that's five fouls. You could see his lips end with five fouls. He fouled Conor Whelan over the line there as well, probably around 10 minutes before that, probably in the referee's mind. Probably persistent fouling was, that itself wasn't the yellow card, but that with the three or four other fouls that he made, I'd say he probably made up the referee's mind for him.
He deserved to go. Aylward is the one of the most sympathy on, Brian, because this is bullshit really from referees, and it's the laziest thing you'll ever see. Yeah. And two lads go wrestling, they both get yellow cards. Like, this is incredible. So Aidan Hart tripped him up. Aylward just came back. He did very little.
Yeah.
And Hart initiated the grip and they were wrestling then. and then they get two yellows. That was a yellow for Hart, not for Aylward. Now, how can a referee justify giving two yellows? The easiest thing in the world is to get your man on a yellow card in Gaelic games, because I've done it plenty of times. I remember in matches, one especially, it was marking Keane O'Sullivan, and I remember Alan Brogan telling me, you've no chance on this lad, he's too fast. And I got into my head, well, I'll get the two of us on a yellow early and at least he'll be under pressure. Yeah. Now, it did me no good, but like, Keane O'Sullivan's a gentleman. And I acted the tramp with him and I got him on a yellow after 10 minutes. The Keane O'Sullivan didn't want any part of the wrestling, but I got him on the ground and we wrestled and we both got a yellow. Yeah. It's just so wrong, Brian, isn't it? Like, I mean, and how often it happens.
Oh, I've been on the tail end of that more times as well. You know, the stuff off the ball. And you're dead right, though, as a forward. Sometimes that's the only way you can protect yourself, too, is to try and get your back on. Just grab them, go to the ground, body. Make sure you don't touch their helmets in the current rule. And both of you will get yellow cards and it should suit you. But then the flip side of it, I've seen it happen where, you know, if you're on a yellow, your marker will do absolutely everything he can to try and get you sent off then at that stage.
Yeah.
I remember Shane O'Neill from Cork actually stamping on my toes and just got away with so subtly, but I got tick and kind of, I didn't hit him, but I just kind of grabbed him and I was already on a yellow. And I remember the ref, I was just being warned I was going to be sent off. And I remember all you wanted to do was bore Shane O'Neill after he doing that to you. But there's nothing you could do, like.
Yeah.
You had to keep your temper, but lads will do that and they'll push it to the last.
So do you,
but you're right, going back to the initial one, like for Aylward, like, could you blame him? Because there was a real dirty one out of Hart, like, you know, he just swept the legs from under him, and you couldn't blame George for getting taken in those situations.
No, and but I would.
In Hart would have fouled him three times, for argument's sake, right? He earned the initial foul, he got up there, and then he kicked him, and then he wrestled him as well. How can three of the fouls be the same punishment as one foul for Jerdon?
Yeah,
you know what I mean, it doesn't make sense. And then he gets punished again because that's his second yellow. Like,
Hart knew what he was doing, I think, when he started holding Aylward.
Yeah.
I think
when he
had him
come,
Hart was
when Jerdon came
enough,
back, he was happy enough. Like,
happy
you know
enough
I mean?
To yeah. get this yeah. going now.
I'd say he was just happy enough that Jerdon didn't. Hart was on the ground. His last ditch was,
yeah,
I'll trip him now. He's down. If he's not, he's going to go through, and you can never know what's going to happen. He'd have an overlap or something like that as well. But he had three fouls on Jerd's one. Jerd got yellow card, and then Hart got yellow card. It doesn't make sense. Like,
no.
You know, how can you do three things and have the same punishment as one thing for Jerry? You know,
yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. What are we all agreed on? It was hard to, people probably won't agree on Hanbury, because anywhere on the field outside of a dangerous position, that's a yellow. It's not really
yeah,
a red,
no,
was it?
No.
It was I wouldn't have that if it was a red.
You look at Jerry's reaction. He got up straight away, back up, got the free yellow card. Everyone would have been happy. I wouldn't say he was looking for a red card for that, you know?
No, I wouldn't say
enough.
I wouldn't say either. So we'll move on from that. What's going on with Clare, Brian? Like, I mean, I can't believe they're even still in it. If they beat Cork, am I right in saying next week they'll beat Cork on the head-to-head? If Limerick beat Tip,
yeah.
and you fancy Limerick to beat Tip, because you'd imagine Tip won't put out their full team, they're in the final. So you'd imagine if Clare beat Cork next week, they're true. And they don't, like, how are they true? They're absolute shambles.
Yeah, they're a disaster. And I'm getting it in the ear now from a lot of my mates, because I tipped Clare to do well this year and thought they might be dark horses for All Ireland. So,
yeah.
What do we know as pundits? No, but they're terrible. They're absolutely, like, I suppose they seem leaderless as well. They can't get Tony Kelly in the ball. It actually mirrors a lot of what's going on with Waterford. You know, obviously Tony Kelly, Austin Gleeson situation. The boys have a free roll, more or less. They don't know where they're supposed to be playing. They're not getting in the ball. Anytime they're touching it, they're too deep, and they're not having any influence on the game whatsoever. John Conlon's not at the same heights as he was at last year. Now, he was more dangerous in the first half, particularly in the first 15-20 minutes, but still at the same time, Limerick, he might have been winning ball and winning frees, but he never really looked like scoring either. 1 point from play, Peter Duggan in the first half, he was the only one that made any sort of inroads. And it's a shambles, being honest, as you said. That's probably the best way to describe it. And like, they look like they're over reliant on a very structured approach, and they're persistent with their puck out strategies and trying to work the ball through the lines, and then the odd time go along, and sometimes you just rather the front it up. I know we keep coming back to this, but try and take on Limerick in some sort of a battle, but it's because Limerick's bullied them from start to finish. They absolutely bullied them and they relished the physical stakes.
Right, it's weird, because maybe stuff will come out during this week, because Waterford took the same hammerings as Clare, and they played a close match each.
Yeah.
And there's all loads of rumours coming out of Waterford. There's nothing coming out of Clare. There's not the same level of crisis in Clare, but it's the exact same,
it's the
crisis.
Same situation now, Barry.
It's just harder to explain.
But if they take a hammer now next weekend, it's the exact same day, the exact same year as Waterford.
Yeah.
And you could argue the point in that Waterford game, if that went on another 5 minutes, Waterford came strong near the end.
Yeah.
And Morris Shannon was winning a lot of ball. They could actually bet him near the end as well. Like, you know what I mean? So they'd have to be very, very worry about what's going to happen Sunday as well.
But this is the interesting, like, you can explain the Waterford thing away with a new manager, maybe new style and, you know, turnover of players, and De Brick isn't the player he used to be. But this is the same young group of Clare players, relatively young, and the same management.
Yeah.
So this is even more hard. This is a real head scratcher.
It is, yeah. It's just, I'd love to know what's going on in Clare training ground. Like, you know, do they actually do tackling drills or in there? It doesn't seem to be. Physically up front, they didn't tackle Limerick, just their full Limerick full back line was just walking it with ball after ball after ball. Then hit Declan Hannan. Declan Hannan hits Aaron Gillander as well. They had a method of play, and every one of them knows exactly what they're doing. Whereas flip side, Clare didn't look like they realised what do we have to do to beat this Limerick team, you know.
Right.
And I expecting a big response after last week, but geez, they were very, very poor. They had a couple of goal chances to start. You could say the kind of momentum went away from after that, but as players you need to stand up there as well, and Podge Collins need to stand up. Aaron Shanner had a good, he started, but he was very, very poor. I expecting big things from him this summer again, you know, injury free there and hurling away for the last while, but he was poor as well. And it's just, you're scratching your head wondering, on paper, yeah, tick all the boxes, these are great lads and they have been good hurlers, but they don't actually put it together as a team, you know. So
yeah,
there's some big questions have to be asked there as well.
Was Tipperary underperforming last year, Brian? Were we overrating some of these Munster teams? Do you know that, like, Tipperary weren't anywhere near at their level last year? You know, realistically, you'd be looking at Tipperary, Limerick and Cork. You know,
yeah,
maybe the chickens are coming home to roost a bit more now that Tipperary are the dominant force that really, with the players they have, they should be.
Yeah, and then go back to Ulster semi-final last year, like, Galway were, like, if you go back and analyse those games, Galway went about 7 points to one up in the opening 20 minutes and missed a sitter of a goal chance. They could have been home and hosed against Clare that day. And only for Clare brought back Colm Galvin as the sweeper, they worked their way back into the game. But Galway were like, you know, they were on the ropes almost after the two games against Kilkenny and then the two games against Clare. They just seemed a tired team towards the end of last year, you know, the 2 year kind of after winning all Ireland, the league and all that. They just seemed very tired towards the end of last year. So maybe that kind of has given a false dawn to how good Clare actually are. And as you said, Tipperary obviously were very poor last year, very disjointed, and we've seen that their players were all over the place, and even the way they structured their team. So it's extremely disappointing, and you know, we've heard numerous times from Gerard Lucknan and some of the biggest critics to Clare that Clare won a soft All-Ireland in 2013. Now, I know Dave will go mad with saying this. There's no such thing as a soft All-Ireland, but I suppose none of the big traditional teams were there that year. You know,
Kilkenny Cork
were beaten, Tip were beaten. Yeah, but Cork were a very, like, they were a surprise package that year. They were in dire straits. Jimmy Barry Murphy kind of came with a kind of a, we wouldn't even say, like, if you look at the team, we go back over the structure of that team, they ran straight through the centre numerous times. I don't know, like, Dublin should have beaten Cork in that All-Ireland semi-final going back that far as well. Like, so, you know, Clare have never hit the heights of that at all. They've never got anywhere even close to getting back, you know, to that sort of level. And it's disappointing for a team like of All-Ireland winners. Like, I know that they've lost a handful of players there, Brendan Bugler and Pat Donnan and that, but they still won a huge amount underage, so they should have been able to fill the gaps pretty easily. But, you know, you see Anthony Daly come out then last week as well. He's very critical of the fact that they're over-reliant on structures and game plans and tactics, and you know, it's becoming a crutch almost for certain teams.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of them. We'll see next week. You wouldn't have too much confidence with them, although they're home to Cork, which is incredible that they still have a chance, and they win that head-to-head.
Yeah, they're true
they
then.
It could still be true, like, which is unbelievable. So Leash are into the Joe McDonagh Cup final, lads. They beat Kerry. They got 5 goals against Kerry in the game. They were leading 3-11 to 1-11 at half-time. Did 8 different scores. Chad Dwyer got 1-3 from midfield. Westmeath look like they're back in the race now. They beat Antrim 29 points to 21. So Leash play Westmeath next, and Leash are kind of in the same boat as Tipperary, which is, this is probably more of a question for the Thursday show, is that, like, Leash are through, Tipperary are through. They play the team that they're most likely to play in the final. Mm. Do you keep the run going? Do you keep confidence high? Or do you play your second string and go? Like, this is all hindsight analysis, yeah, really. You have to wait to see the
you
outcome.
You don't know. You never know until you go play the game and you go play the actual final then and see how it goes, really, more than that. But yeah, I suppose, look, they'll say if they're trying up, lads, they're going to try their squad there as well. And if you're going to try your squad, you might as well try it when you're actually fully qualified and then bring back your big guns in. And then it gives a bit of competition for place there as well. If guys do play well with that particular game, they can go play the final then as well. And you know you're straightening your hand there as well. But I couldn't see the point of playing your full strength team and your last game when you're qualified already, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me neither. So, like, without using the benefit of hindsight, the correct thing to do in this situation, Brian, is to play your panel, right?
I slightly disagree. I'd play 10, 11, 12 of the starting team and put in those players that are knocking on the door,
right.
Give them opportunities, because there's nothing worse. Like we're probably all lucky that we were starting on teams regularly, but there's nothing worse when you're like trying to break onto a panel and next minute you're starting with three or four other guys in the defence or in the forwards and you're all trying to make the team, you know. Whereas if you're slotting in beside someone that's already on the team and you can, you know, say for instance current forward, you have regular full forwards there beside you, the regular centre forward, the regular wing forward, it's a lot easier to try and perform and put your hand up in those situations.
Yeah.
So I'd have a look at only like, you know, 3-4 players, and then you can bring on a few players then as well and give them a bit of game time. So I wouldn't make wholesale changes to the team. I'd still try and go and win it and keep the main safe. If anyone has any sort of a niggle, I'd make them rest and situate to that. But I wouldn't go with a full new panel. I think when you're winning, keep winning and keep other teams doubting.
Okay, that's fair enough. We'll agree to disagree on that one. So there was an incredible stat from Brendan Cummins last night in the Sunday game, right? So Limerick had 71 passes and 35 were misplaced. 35 went astray. Half, right? So Limerick, for me, are the second best possession team in the country. Cork are the best. Cork are the best at that. Mm. Stick passes to hand. So here we are now from a football snob. So 71 passes. This is the second best possession based team in hurling. And I'd never seen a stat like that because you never really know, you know. So they're poking half of them away.
Yeah, but who's picking
Explain
them up?
Explain to me here, JJ.
Who's picking them up after they've, very fair enough, half position going away? Limerick doesn't get it, but I'd say another Limerick is picking up straight away after it. You know, I didn't see many clear lads coming out, too many rooks with that either, to be honest with you. You know, Limerick,
right.
I was surprised with that, to be honest with you, because I thought Limerick were very economical in the ball in 20, 30
are,
yards,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they're usually straight to hand now as well. You can take conditions into it, a bit of shower rain maybe before the game or something like that, you can put that into account. But I wouldn't say they lost a huge amount of second phase play, if you want, for argument's sake. I'd say another Limerick lad, the way they were all over the field there yesterday. So I'd say if one Limerick lad lost it, I'd say the second guy picked it up. I'd say, I wouldn't say a clear lad came out with it, to be honest with you.
Right. So maybe that's a ball that might break down and the Limerick man gets it and puts it over the bar. Would that be a misplaced pass, Brian, then, on the stats?
Yeah, that'd be my reading of it as well. And I think, in fairness, Limerick, they're the masters of the second ball. And I suppose most teams that are dominant in any game, it's the second ball that counts so much, because, you know, you wouldn't think looking at that game, I think we're all perplexed looking at that statistic, you know,
yeah.
35, almost half, that they hit that many balls away and were so dominant. I don't know. It just seemed that Limerick had possession and way more possession than Clare and seemed to use it so intelligently. But it must have been that, you know, any of the longer strike balls might have been more 50-50. But, you know, eventually Limerick won that second phase, as far as I'd be concerned.
Yeah, it seems fair. I was going to suggest get a few football coaches in there, lads, to try and retain possession. But like, I mean, we'll leave it there. Right, we'll be back and we'll take a look at the Galway Kilkenny game.
You can't touch this.
A few weeks later they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park. The same year. And they were being hockey. But the camera went in, there was a fella warming up. Well, Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, now, fuck, he was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, you can't touch this. Look at my eyes.
Yeah, so speaking of football men involved with hurling teams, Kieran Donaghy obviously is in with Galway, and Galway beat Kilkenny 3-20 to 2-22 in what was an absolute classic by all accounts, and kind of pissed me off looking at this in Croke Park when I was watching a terrible game with Leash and Meath, and then a one-sided game with Kildare and Dublin. Micheál Donoghue celebrated afterwards. Yeah. You don't often see him like that, JJ. No. And he said it was a great game to win. Like, I mean, we were talking last Thursday, Galway really needed this, yeah, you know, to spark, yeah, into life. Do you think this will, yeah, spark them into life?
I'd say he was building them up over the last week and hoping for a performance. So, and say come 4 o'clock there last Sunday, he was absolutely delighted with himself. He made a jump after the final whistle now, and wouldn't be like him at all. He's high-fiving all the players as well. Huge, huge win for just a boost of confidence for all the players who are out there. And then all the narrative last week was you can't do without Joe and who's going to step up.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Johnny Glynn, came in centre forward and he won a mountain of ball and he just made himself awkward and he broke a lot of ball for Cotton Mannion now and Brian Kilcannon and Jason Finn, these guys. So he would be absolutely delighted. Now, if he looks back in the game now, he'll have a lot of areas he has to work on too now in regarding the defence. But no, going forward, I'd say he was delighted to get the win down in Kilkenny. And he's a good record against Kilkenny. Micheál Donoghue has, in fairness to him,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he beat them twice last year, didn't he? Like, I mean, he definitely did, although the gap has closed probably this year from last year. It looked like Galway were kind of streaking away a bit. Like, I mean, Kilkenny were only 3 points behind at half time, having played against the wind, Brian, so that would have been looking like a good position for them to have been in.
Yeah, but look, they're so reliant on TJ though. Now, look, don't get me wrong, he's phenomenal and his performances are just getting better and better. You know, yesterday, every time they needed him, he got a big score, and his goals obviously came at crucial times. But, you know, while they're having good performances and very wholehearted performances from every single player that's out there, they still probably need a little bit more up front. You know, more players really, you know, putting their shoulder to wheel. Colin Fenley puts in a massive, honest, you know, 70 minutes, but he's probably not hitting the same scoring heights that he would like to be hitting. You know, Billy Ryan chipped in with a couple of points. Joe Aylward didn't really score enough for my liking. Richie Hogan came in. He's not scoring as freely as he used to. So they definitely need more up front in terms of TJ. Walter Walsh obviously been a big loss. But as Jay just said earlier, there's one here guaranteed with Kilkenny at the moment is they are going to die with their boots on. They're never beaten. They stay going literally till the final whistle. And, you know, you have to give credit for that because if you could bottle that and sell it, you'd be a millionaire because that's one thing that Cody has instilled in his Kilkenny team. So I think that's why they were disappointed a couple of years ago that seemed to be going out of them, this new set of players, but it's been fixed.
It's a huge threat to have for any team.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you take that for the Waterford team, Clare team, if that happened, Galway would get on top of them, they would have just won by 15, 20, 25 points even, yeah, for arguments. They just would have gave up completely. But Kilkenny came back, even with a man down, he came back. And again, if we're talking about this, the injury time, phantom injury time, if they had went on, I'd say would have, you're back, Kilkenny get the draw or even the win, you know. But no, that's what Brian does. He instills that in anyone he gets. He doesn't care if you score 10 points. It doesn't make a difference if you don't chase the guy. And the guy that epitomised that more than anyone is TJ Reid. TJ Reid scores 2-5,
yeah,
from
definitely.
Play. And the work rate he does is absolutely phenomenal. He's back down the field. And as a supporter, you're saying, TJ, you don't go back down there. You get someone else to chase him. You go back up in the forward.
Yeah.
But he goes back, he gets a flick in. He's a brilliant tackler as well. And he's just, I think yesterday was the best exhibition that he gave in Kilkenny short. He was just unbelievable. He was all over the field. No one could handle him. Each one of the Galway halfback and tried to mark him. They might have got a couple of one ball or two ball off him, but like both TJ's, he works his game, he figures out what the defender is doing, and then he kind of counteracts that as well. They might win one or two off him, but I guarantee you won't mean three or four off in a row off TJ as well.
Yeah.
He's just brilliant. Brilliant in the air. He's so quick on his feet there as well. Like, and he's brilliant to kind of evade a tackle. And if he does into a tackle, he's strong enough to kind of push the defender off and then he goes on again. Like, he's just, yeah, phenomenal yesterday.
He's you're taking all your good stuff now for performance of the weekend. I have him well separated out for that, JJ. But I thought Garrod McInerney's defending for his second goal was terrible. He got caught completely ball watching on the wrong side of a break. Like, I mean, that's poor defending, Brian.
Yeah, I actually was more disappointed with John Hanbury's attempt at a challenge. He just ghosted by him. Now, it was brilliant from TJ that he feinted like he was going to hit it, and I would say majority hurlers in Ireland would have struck the first time, but he put it back in the hurl and went through the challenge. Yeah. But like John Hanbury, like he just went straight by him, and John just put the hurl, and I thought, you know, he should have been, look, rugby tackling him, doing everything he could to try and take him down in that situation. Or at least putting his body on the line. So I thought that was worse. I know they all got caught ball watching under the high ball. There was obviously no call there from a Galway perspective. Two or three of them went up under the ball, but it just shows how elusive TJ is. He's brilliant vision, he's brilliant anticipation, and then obviously I don't know, that awareness that you know Hanbury was coming across and be able to put back on the hurl and make sure he got in space and rifled up into the top corner. But look, he's exceptional, and he's something, you know, JJ touching it there, his work rate is phenomenal as well. But even the first goal he got, he broke onto a ball around 65 and it eventually went into Colin Fennelly, but he just kept moving, you know. So he went from the 65 all the way into the 21 in just the blink of an eye, and that's how he loses his marker, because he's obviously been marked so tight, but he just never stops moving and never stops working, and that's how he eventually shrugs them all off. So, but look, he's obviously been watched extremely tight. He's been man-marked, and we see the same with Tony Kelly, we see the same with Austin Gleeson. But I actually think what really helps him as opposed to the other two players is that he bases himself at centre forward, and that's his, you know, it. There's where he starts, and he moves from there. Whereas the other boys seem to have a license to go anywhere, and they don't have an actual position. That, you know, when it's going wrong or it's not really kind of working out for me, you can just set yourself into your position for, you know, a minute or two, and you know, and maybe just hurl your own area and try and work your way into a game.
Yeah.
But TJ's exceptional.
It's a big difference between TJ and likes Tony Kelly now and Aston Gleeson. Now, last season, not as much, but Tony Kelly, the big thing you see is you've poked the ball 70 yards down straight on top of TJ Reid 9 times and he's going to win the own ball himself. Whereas Tony Kelly's relying on someone else to win the ball. He comes around the loop. Maybe that's not his fault, but their management are telling him to do that. And he has to get someone else to win primary possession first and then hand pass out, he'll score then. But TJ's just got to do it himself. Like, you know what I mean? It's so easy for a goalie. Whereas TJ, puck it out straight on top of him. If you're under pressure, where do you go? Straight to your main man, straight to TJ. Like, and he wins majority of his own ball anyway. It's a huge thing to have in your locker.
I actually think Tony Kelly wouldn't be too bad. Like, he's not bad in the air. It's just that they don't hit any ball on top of him, and it's not told go and win your own ball. It's a different message completely.
Right.
Do you know, like he wouldn't be, you know, as you know with Cody, JJ's, you'd be told like win your own ball.
Yeah.
Like that's your first and foremost of any team. Like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like that's the same with us at home with the club. You know, win your own ball. It doesn't matter how high you are, you go and you win it, or at least if you're not winning it, you're breaking it. Whereas Tony Kelly doesn't get those balls poked down on top of him. That's not the message that's coming from him. They're so reliant on their puck out strategies. Like they're over-reliant. Like I that drives me mad. It's a crutch, and I've said this numerous times, but I think that's really evident when you break it down. When I know there are times you hit short puck outs or quick puck outs, and of course that needs to be done at times. But there are other times where you just have to man up and win your own ball, or as I said, at least break it.
Yeah, TJ won. I think Kilkenny won 9 aerial balls during the game. Maybe that was from play. I just saw a stat, and he won 7. He won 7 of them, and that's on top of the 2-5 from play and the 2-11 in general. I think why TJ gets on ball, which Tony Kelly and Austin Gleeson don't, is because TJ works. And you can't mark someone who's working. Like, you can't man mark someone who's tackling someone else. So you have to just kind of pull off him then. Whereas Tony Kelly and Austin Gleeson drop back, but they're not working, so they're being marked.
That's a
you know,
point.
TJ's working.
And he gets himself on the ball. Like.
Yeah, because I often remember Brian Duer, I don't want to bring football into it again, says, how's he always popping up in space all over the field? Like, I mean, why is he not being man marked? Because he's back doubling up, tackling, and his man can't shadow him doing that. You just look like a fool, you know? So, like, I mean, that's how these lads.
That's leadership maybe, as well, though. Yeah, you know what I mean? He's not relying on someone else to do it. I'll go do this myself. I win the ball, and then as a team, we're on the attack again.
And then TJ is free because his man's dropped off.
Yeah.
You know, say, I'm not going to mark a fella who's working or whatever. The Brendan Cummins showed last night on the Sunday game as well, the use of Galway using their extra man. And this was criminal now from Callanan at the end, where there's I think it was Joseph Cooney's clearly free. They had a spare
last minute of the game.
Well, that was the last minute of the game one.
If I was telling me a goalkeeper, get it down the field as far as you.
But he showed a few
40
examples.
40 yards out was very. I know he was open, all right, but there was.
But they're a spare man.
I know, but as a keeper, like, you know what I mean? You have to back yourself 100% there to get that to Joseph Cooney. That slips out of his hand or anything like that. He would be absolutely lambasted by every supporter in Galway, you know what I mean?
I'll take your point maybe on the very last one, but there was other examples.
That's the last one I'm talking about, right?
Like, here's the thing, right? So, what's your system? Like, if that was Limerick, that's going to that spear man. The minute Grod Hegarty and Tom Morrissey and Kyle Hayes drop deep, they get it. Or else, like we always say, what's the point in them dropping deep? You're only hitting it to men. So then their halfback have to push up on them and have to do something about that. And then you can give to your full forward line. But without giving it to Hegarty and these lads, and they always get the short pass when they drop deep. But like Galway had a spare man yesterday and they're not making Kilkenny worry about this because they're not actually using him. I find that it's just tactically it's not good enough, is it?
Yeah, they're just getting the ball up the field as quickly as they can really. And look, if you're hitting a high ball up the field, it should be a backs ball really, to be fair. Like, whereas Limerick, they're all hit high ball, 20 or 30 yard passes down up through the lines down. They can even go backwards as well. They go forward to Garrod Hegarty, he might throw back to Declan Hannan, and then it's going over to the far side of the field. Like, yeah. You know, they're very, very good usage of the ball, whereas Galway just got it, Spearman.
But it's just a different style.
It's a different style, but it's more, Limerick one is more, right, we'll play to the forward's advantage, whereas the Galway one yesterday was getting up the field and it's gone away from our goal. It wasn't really to the forward's advantage, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. And Brian, I don't know, when they had a spare man for however long they had when Murphy got sent off, like, you would have thought that they would have maybe gone through the lines a bit more then.
Yeah, and probably, again, getting confused between systems, because against Wexford, they probably were over playing the ball and went through the lines too much and didn't go direct enough. So they seem to have changed their style, because they were very direct when they had their six big forwards. But I'd say with Johnny Glynn there yesterday, they were probably more in the mind of that they're going to go direct. And again, that message that would have probably come in from Micheál Donoghue would have been to the forwards that they had to man up, you know, going to Nolan Park, going against Kilkenny, the masters of high ball, that the players had to start winning their own ball. So, you know, maybe the messages just keep seeping through and, you know, from a back's perspective, that they're just getting the ball and hitting it up the field. Yeah, so look, there are times game management that they need to actually smarten up on, but at the same time, it's hugely positive from a Galway perspective, which we didn't. I didn't see this coming. I think they have the players to do it, but I just didn't see enough against Wexford. I thought they were very poor against Wexford, but I was critical of not playing Johnny Glynn that day, and you know, especially in that game against Wexford where he destroyed them the year previous down in Wexford Park. Johnny Glynn makes them tick. You know, they've an out ball. They're able to go direct long one, or route one, and you know, he's able to bring other players into the game, and then couple that with Cottle Mannion just playing outrageous, you know, like he's just
don't go to town on Mannion. I've already lost TJ Reid from my next section, so I'm going to cut you off there now. let's talk about Adrian Toohey then, because I mean, he's not in my performance of the week. How did he do? I didn't see the game, Brian. He's a cornerback, a defender playing wing forward.
Yeah, he popped up and he got a point, and he had another couple of opportunities. He could have played David Burke in the second half when Galway were, you know, on the attack, and he opted to shoot himself. David Burke was livid with him. But when I seen the team name, I was convinced Adrian Toohey and Joseph Cooney would swap. You look at that, but obviously Cooney's well used to playing in the backs with his club with Sarsfields. But Adrian Toohey, maybe it's a sign of the modern half forward, that it's about hard work and dropping back and helping out in your defence, and then, you know, working the ball and trying to, you know, support your midfield then as well. So maybe there's that's the thought of him actually playing there. And obviously you can go route one with him as well. He's very strong in the air. You know, he's left-hander as well, so he's hard handling the air. So, you know, maybe they're looking at those strengths from their half forwards.
Right, so we say that worked, JJ? We'll continue on with
it.
Yeah,
it definitely worked. Another look there next Saturday night, only 100%, yeah, because he worked very hard, and his legs as well, which is a big thing. You could get him around the field. He's very, very quick.
Canning is going to be back next Saturday night, right?
Yeah, but it's an option there, you know what I mean? You can't have all kind of...
It might not be him to lose out. Johnny Glynn could go full forward and Flynn or Concannon could lose out.
Could, yeah. Yeah. No, Joe Canning back then, you would say, right, do we need Jason Flynn there, because Joe will be taking a freeze there again, you know what I mean? Yeah. So there could be something like that there. But in regard to work rate and kind of working back to help his midfielder half-back line, he did a lot of work there. And then he kind of got a couple of opportunities to shoot at the goal there as well, scored a couple of points, and he did okay. I'd say, look, he'd done enough to get a start the next day now, but he loved himself to take it after that, you know.
What about Joe Cooney then? wing back. Do you like him there?
Yeah, he's very strong on a high ball. If you hit a high ball, and he'll win that all day.
So whole half back line, Mannion, McInerney and Cooney, you're not poking long balls.
But then,
then
TJ won ball off nearly the three of them, I'd say, you know, that kind of way. Yeah. But then again, you're talking about a different breed when you're talking about TJ, you know. But it'd be interesting to see. I'd say he'll stay there now, especially, say, Parnell Park next Saturday night. It'll be a tight field. You'll need big men in around the half-back line there as well. So I'd say he will definitely start there next Saturday night.
Yeah, no, against Dublin, definitely. What about Palmer?
Go back on Aidan Toohey for a second. Like, you know, he was back corner back because they had their problems in the full-back line then as well. So I don't know. I'm not convinced John Hambury's not been hurling at the height he was a couple of years ago. You know, so I still think they have their problems in their full-back line. Johnny Cohen, you know, He popped up. Obviously, he has played a cornerback, you know, a few years ago. I think they need to start out their full back line a little bit more than what's going on. So maybe Adrian Toohey, while he's going well up there, I think they should try and tighten up at the back and make sure they're not conceding any scores, because I think that's essentially. I know a lot of it was TJ, but they're still leaving teams in the game. I think generally they'll score enough down the other end.
Was Paul Murphy defending for Conor Whelan's goal poor, JJ? Like, he's goal side of him. Whelan pretty much runs over him.
He was on the yellow card at that particular time. He was on the yellow before that. And I'd say if he wasn't on the yellow before that, you would have seen the same tackle the second time.
He'd have wrapped him up and
dragged him down. Exact same as what Parry Mannion would have done. Like, he held onto your man's arm. He didn't let him in. But Hall would have done the same thing. But
there isn't a goal on there where Whelan has the ball in his hands. There shouldn't be a goal.
Connor's so strong that he will take everyone on. He'll back himself all day long. He's just a nightmare to mark. He'll just follow to the end of the earth. So strong, so skillful, and he's actually bringing a lot of accuracy back to his play there as well.
He
has hit form again. Now, in fairness, the last two games, he's been the main man up front there for Galway, you know. So huge thing. But yeah, no, I'd say Paul, if he wasn't on the yellow card the first one, he would have done the exact same thing, and he would have wrapped him up, took the free, took the yellow card, and moved on. Then again, it's, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. So to finish up here, Galway won 11 contested aerial balls, Kilkenny 9. I was just saying, TJ won 7 of those 9. Johnny Glynn caught 4 of the contested aerial balls. Joe Cooney 2, Pádraic Mannion won a couple of each. But Johnny Glynn, like you said, Brian, all of a sudden, like, Johnny Glynn's back in now, a huge physical man who can also play. Like, I mean, sometimes people forget how good he is as well. And then Joe Canning back, and all of a sudden now you have Mannion on fire, you have Conor Whelan on fire, you have a half back line that's big and imposing. And now all of a sudden Galway, I know you can't every Monday change your mind on teams, but at the same time, like they're looking an awful lot stronger than they were 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Certainly. And look, we were critical of them after the Wexford game, and we were saying we needed to see something. And look, essentially that's what we have. We've seen it now. We've seen green shoots from Sunday. So maybe this was all part of the master plan for Micheál Donoghue, you know, just go through the motions with that league. Because as you said numerous times, that league was an absolute waste of time. He just blooded players in, not just him, obviously all other teams. And he looked at the first couple of games and said, look, you know, they'll beat Carlo. The Wexford game, they probably expected to win that at home, but they didn't perform, particularly in that second half. And it was all about this game with Kilkenny. This was going to be the real start of the championship from their perspective, coming to Nolan Park. And essentially, they got their win. And as you said, it looks an awful lot better now going forward. You'd be a lot happier if you're Galway people, you know, waking up this morning and saying, do you know what? You know, this team aren't gone away, and they're still in the hunt. You know, so they realise that this team has been on the road now a number of years, because even before they won the All-Ireland, you know, they've been knocking on the door for, you know, quite a couple of years. So it's not just year two or year three of Micheál Donoghue. Like, it's about year 5, year 6 for this particular team. So maybe Micheál Donoghue has been trying to time it a little bit later for this team. And you know, looking at yesterday, maybe he's right.
Yeah, maybe. So what final word on Kilkenny, JJ? So, like, I mean, Killian Buckley has to come back in. James Maher has to come back in. I don't know if Conor Delaney's back ready or not.
There was a couple more.
While Adrian Mullen went off at half-time, he was disappointing by the looks of things. How can Kilkenny improve for the next year? Walter Walsh, how bad is he? Like,
I think he rolled his ankle there last week now, so how close he's coming back, I'm not sure. But look, Amir, if he's 80 or 90%, then you're going to have to start him now come Saturday night, because you're going to have to win this one. It's going to be a huge game down in Wexford Park Saturday night as well. This point is James Marr didn't come on. I'd say he's probably closer to starting than maybe Killian Buckley, because James only got injured there 6 weeks ago, whereas Killian didn't. He played one game at the club there after the Carlow match, but and I know he's trained away for the last couple of weeks since, but very hard to get back up to that level. Like, you know, whereas at least James Marr had the league under his belt there as well, and he had all that bank of heavy training under his belt there as well. So you'd be hoping he'd come back in there. But yeah, it's look, it's they know where, exactly where they are now at the moment. They'll have to win Saturday night, or else they're going to have to rely on results. But knowing Brian, he won't want to rely on anyone else. He'll have to go down to Wexford Park and win, which they're having a great record there over the last couple of years. And Davey has a kind of a hoodoo sign over him over the last while too, you know. So we know what Wexford are going to come with now, so Kilkenny are going to have to kind of counteract that sweeper system as well.
Yeah, with that team that lined out against Galway, I wouldn't be that confident down in Wexford Park.
Yeah, I suppose
you'd want a few lads back. You want those few lads that we've called out back.
But then again,
JJ's smiling here now for anyone who can see.
On Saturday, right? Everyone was saying that Kilkenny would beat Galway. Again, we're reacting to a point loss.
I tipped Galway.
Oh, did you?
I'm not an expert here, lads.
You know more than the rest of us there, Willie.
maybe that's why I tipped Galway, because I don't know what I'm talking about.
But no, as I said, throw Walter back into it, and he takes a bit of pressure off TJ, and there's another out ball for the goalkeeper there as well. So look, it's going to be an intriguing game down there. It's going to be a huge game. Wexford will again, they won't lie down in Wexford Park either, and after having a couple of good wins under the belt there as well. So it's going to be a good game down there.
Yeah, I think Davey was in his box the last match down there.
He was, yeah.
I was down at that.
He wouldn't talk to you, would he not?
No,
he was in his box.
I was glad he didn't see me down there. I didn't want him coming gunning for me. Right, we'll come back with Paddy Power Performance the weekend. It won't include TJ Reid.
I remember my mother, the lad of Mersin, she's dead. She's 8 years this year. She never saw me hurling live, but she always went to the matches, to the hotel, the two finals, and we got off the bus after the first one, and the first person to meet me was my mother, and she said, look, what's meant to be is meant to be. She said, keep the head up. I said, grand. No problem, ma'am, thanks. 96, back to the hotel again, first person off the bus, my mother. She says, look, what's meant to be? I said, ma'am, you give it a fucking right.
Okay, lads, TJ Reid has been done 2-11, 2-5 from play, and we've talked plenty enough about him. He's just a phenomenon. I'd say having like a little bit like Andy Moran. Andy Moran is playing a little bit longer than he should, but his full time job is in fitness and in his gyms. I'd say that's helping TJ a lot. He's practically a professional athlete, because I presume he's tipping away doing a lot of recovery in there, JJ.
I'd have to be.
You know, I'd say that probably would it tell.
That'd be a huge thing for him, and he's probably educating himself a lot more regarding nutrition and whatever like that as well. You know what I mean? But even his
His physical is only one side. Yeah. His hurling is just on another level.
It's on a different level, all right. I don't think there's anyone in Ireland that will be able to hurl him at the moment, to be honest with you, the way he's going. He's done the same thing against Dublin, and he's done the same thing against Galway the other day. Now, his Pádraig Mainne, probably one of the best halfbacks out there on the field at the moment. And
he started on him, didn't he?
Didn't have any answer for him. No, right. No, he didn't have any answer for him. He got a point earlier on, and once TJ gets a point earlier on, the confidence comes up, and you look at TJ, he probably scores more for Kilkenny than he does for Ballyhale. You know, it's amazing stat.
Yeah, it's crazy the way he's able to rise to
The only thing I'll say, and I know this is for Thursday's show, but if there's one team that's able to upset TJ and Walter Walsh, it is Wexford and their style of play. Like, because they really go man to man, and their marker completely forget about the ball, you know, and because they have the sweeper. So that I think they're the one team that really upset me. I think that's why Kilkenny have not made much inroads in against Wexford in the last couple of years, I think, because of their sweeper system. So that real tight marking where a defender literally doesn't even entertain them, you know.
Well, Matthew O'Hanlon will be butting heads with Walter Walsh, that's a guarantee, right? I'd imagine. So Cottle Mannion there, you can work away now, Brian. We're in performance of the weekend.
We're waiting for it.
What can you say? I know, look, honestly, this lad is phenomenal, and he's carrying over the form from the league now. It's starting to come again now. He's getting used to his position at wing forward. like 6-7 points from play. He can score from anywhere. But the bit I can't get over with Colin Mannion is that he doesn't just like hit the ball over the bar. He absolutely drives it about 40 yards past the post. Like he knocked the ball out of the stadium a couple of times, and whether it's left or right, it's just so nonchalant in his strike. And,
yeah.
You know, he'll flick it over from 60 yards with just a flick of the wrist. It's like he's phenomenal when his radar's in like that. And obviously, he's great vision as well. He's up there when he's on form. Like, he's up there one of the best forward in the game. He's just class.
He is unmarkable. He's been unmarkable a while, but then he might go into a game. He's not as consistent as the TJ Reid and these fellas, but like, he's mercurial. Like, there's no marking him.
No, when he's on form, there's no marking him.
He got six in the first half. And he set up one for Concannon. He set up Flynn for another one. There's eight.
Yeah,
he's directly involved with. And he marked all three of the Kilkenny halfback line.
I think if you're going to mark Manny, you have to go at him wherever he goes. You can't even give him 5 yards because his wrists are so good. He'll take a step back and he can hit off the back foot there, as all good forwards can hit off the back foot, and he'll always make the goal. It's just all depend, does he have the shot on target or not? But you never see one of Cotton Mannion's shots going into the keeper's hands, because always, as Brian said, he's 30 or 40 yards over the net. It's just the case of, does he get it accurate or not? And 8 times out of 10 he gets him over the bar. You know what I mean? He's a phenomenal player and a great wrist.
Is he up there?
The pint he got where he underneath the stand where he fainted, like he was going to hit the ball across the field on his right side, and he just spun, and that was just sheer class. I thought that was his point of his day now.
Is he up there with Bubbles for wrist?
He is, yeah, 100%.
Who else is in that very elite wrist category then?
Patrick Horgan. Yeah, the three of them are probably top three. TJ's there as well, like, you know what I mean? I know we're talking about TJ again, but he's up there. The four of them now are probably the top.
And would Joe Canning not have really good wrists?
Yeah, Joe would.
Joe Canning it would.
We've got a top five wristy hurlers. We'll have Cyril Farrell sponsoring this slot here.
He'll have the final call.
We'll have to ask him. But Colin Mannion looks to me a little bit like Bubbles in that he doesn't look like he's even striking it. It's not like he's even, you know, as Brennan Cummins says, planting his feet and driving it. He's wristing it. He's flicking it, isn't he?
Yeah, he's class. Yeah. He hits the ball on the move as well. And
on the move,
doesn't need to be set. Doesn't need to be balanced. Either right or left, he can obviously make the goal. He can 60, 70 yards just of a little flick, that's all. Like, you know, it's brilliant.
But it goes against everything you're taught as a young lad, because you're always teaching young lads to, you know, hit the ball on the front foot and, you know, take your fuller. But look, I know myself, I think you can score, when obviously you get to that level, you can score an awful lot of points hitting it on the back foot, kind of over your shoulder. Sometimes that's the only way you can lose your defender. And like, you know what I say, Jay, from that perspective, you're trying to lean in and block down.
Yeah.
It's a really hard way to block down, obviously. It's very hard, but like, you're just trying to, sometimes it's the only way you can get your shot off. The reason you're trying not allow players to do it when they're young is that it's really, really difficult to do, and it takes a hell of a lot of practice. And that's where your strong wrists come in, because if you don't do it properly, it just looks poor. It'll drop short, or it'll waver out wide. But like, I think if you want to get to the top of your game, you do need to be able to actually pull that shot off.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, Owen Kelly's the one that jumps to my mind. Yeah. I'm sure you've marked him, JJ. Yeah. Like, when Owen Kelly got the ball in his hands,
you couldn't get it off him. It was a shot off, and
if he was on form, there was actually no defending him. I remember. When Owen Kelly get the ball in his hand, you say, here's a point.
Yeah.
Like, your marker's powerless, because he's just throwing it back to where you can't block it and putting it over.
Remember Hurling Fitzgibbon there, and Paul Curran was full back and I was cornerback, and we were playing, I think we were in LIT in one of Fitzgibbon games, and Paul was saying, like, if you don't get the ball before Owen Kelly, like, he's the same club man, he's going to score. So the only way of marking Owen Kelly is get the ball first.
Right.
And that was coming from a guy that would have marked him all the way up through his career, you know what I mean? He kind of stuck to me all the way through.
Because he was so physically strong too. He'd give you a little shot and then he's gone out and then you're gone.
And then he's gone off the back foot there as well.
See,
only picture of Owen Kelly taking a shot at the goal. It's always on his back foot and he's leaning back. But he always made the goal. And always accurate as well.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. So I put Conor McDonald into this, lads. He scored 1-4 from play. And the reason I put him in it, because Marie Crow did the report last night, and she said in the report that Wexford showed a bit of variety in that they went route one a little bit. And Conor McDonald is a player I like, and I would have always thought one of his main strengths is getting up and catching the ball. And he got a lovely point from hitting it right and catching a clean ball. Like, I often have said that Wexford don't get the best out of him in the system that they're in, and maybe they are going to show a bit of variety and let him use his strengths like that.
That ball down to the ground, because there was a Carlo back coming. he was backing backwards and Conor was coming out. He just played the hurl, caught the ball and moved out the right hand side and hit the ball over the bar, all in the one movement, you know. So
he's very, very strong in the air.
No, because they're either playing down the wings or else they're running with the ball a lot. And that long ball, he kind of, the DiCarlo back caught under the ball and Conor was just timed his run perfectly. So your man, DiCarlo back, was just there for the taking really more than that. And then Conor went up because the guy that was marking Conor couldn't make it out in time. So he's caught in between two Carlo backs, but he still won the ball in the air. He's very, very strong in the air now, to be fair.
No, he is very strong. Killian,
he's a master at that. Sorry, go back for a second. He's a master at that in club championship in Wexford as well. You know, you often see the snippets of the club championship down there, and he's scoring goal after goal in similar situations. High ball in or around the square, and he's really, really strong. And you're right, I agree with you, and you know this. I don't think they're getting anywhere near enough out of Conor McDonald and Rory O'Connor in that Wexford setup at the moment. I know Davey came out after the game was saying that we were actually too attacking at times, but again, it's very structured play. I just think they'd be better suited playing a more, not completely traditional, but you know, back towards a more traditional style and actually play three inside. I think they actually have really good hurlers, and I think they could rattle teams if they change it up slightly.
Yeah, but I even think change it up slightly for the first 20 minutes we'll play our usual, last 50 minutes first half, lads, you're pushing up and we're going to go long to Conor and leave the other team guessing. Like, I don't see enough of that. I always thought Davey was good at doing stuff like that.
Well, something like that, you get 10-15 minutes out of a tactic because people are not using it
before they figure it out,
before it's a pattern there as well, and then management will come in and counteract it. But yeah, you're right, 10-15 minutes for half time, why not change it up and go for
it?
Especially the first half as well, like.
Yeah, exactly. Grod Hegarty, lads, he's a monster of a man, isn't he? Jesus, he's
great
just
player as well, though.
Brilliant.
Phenomenal player. Skillful. Like, this year is probably, you're only appreciating how skillful the guy is, you know what I mean? Whereas last year, you probably think workhorse, got a couple of points, but actually, from the league and going on, it's just his touch and his skill, and he's just leaving halfbacks for dead now, and he's scoring at will, so he is at the moment. Yeah.
And when he scored that point, he came short for a short ball and got it, and he made a run the whole length of the field. Usually you see hurlers, now this is me just looking from the outside, usually see the hurler shorten the hurl at the very last minute. He shortened the hurl and soloed it maybe for the last 20 metres. You knew what he was doing.
He knew exactly where the back was as well. Like, you know what I mean? And he turned out in front of him and hit the ball over the bar and kind of scooped it over the bar really more than that. But he knew he had to do it because David Fitzgerald was right on his tail, but he knew he had to shorten it up and flick it. Just game awareness again. Like.
David Sterling's not slow and he just couldn't catch him either. Like, Hegarty, the length of his strides, I'd say I take about 10 strides to make up two of his, I'd say.
Running after him, it'd be like walking to a match with your father when you were five.
Spent porn off you.
And all he's doing is walking and you're sprinting.
Grod Hegarty, we were talking about Adrian too earlier. Grod Hegarty used to play a lot, like, in the backs when he was younger as well. And, you know, he's converted into a really hard working wing forward, but he's able to score obviously as well. And like, I saw him down in Waterford the week before and he's able to get into space, and you know, he's really, really important to that Limerick forward line, and he comes short and he's great options, and obviously he can hit the ball down top of him as well because he's so strong in the air. And look, he's getting really consistent in his performance at the moment, but very, very, very important to Limerick. And it's the likes of his work, and I'm glad that we're actually talking about, because it's like his work that create this space inside for Mulcahy and Galan and Peter Casey inside, because look, he's excellent. He's a really important cog in that wheel.
But an important point as well is that the Limerick system that does this, because if Grod Hegarty dropped the way he did and he was ignored, they're gone. Then the opposition's halfbacks will just let him off.
Yeah.
They follow him because they have to follow him.
You know, he's going to get the ball.
But that's the system. Yeah. Like, I mean, if that system's all over the place and Kanerkis and doing these walkthroughs and drilling it into them, they have to get it. And like, it's very clear that Limerick are a very well coached side within their system, isn't it?
That's brilliant, Jeff. Like, even Gerard Hegarty himself wouldn't make them runs if the ball was just going over his head and his man was hitting a load of ball. He'd do it two or three times. If his man was hitting three or four balls, he'd have to go back and nearly mark the halfback there again, you know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas Limerick are finding him with the ball as much as possible as well. And then that's where their platform is. And as I said previously, they don't always go forward. He has to hand pass it back to the likes of Declan Hannan, and then sure, he's like a quarterback whenever he gets the ball in his hand, and he was fantastic there yesterday as well.
Yeah, see, that makes sense then. Once Hegarty knows his halfback has followed him, throw it to Hannan, and he's given it into space.
And then space
just
in behind it.
It's a beautiful system. Yeah. It's a well-oiled machine, isn't it? Really, really is. Killian Doyle, Brian, got 17. He got 9 frees, 2 65s. He got, was it 2-10 he got against Offaly? He's been shooting the lights out.
He got 1-12 and 1-11, yeah. And I was actually up at the game in Dunleigh. I was doing commentary for the GA now, and he gave an exhibition of hurling, to be fair to him. He was absolutely excellent at centre forward, He actually missed his very first shot and he was disappointed with himself, but thereafter he just, it's like his radar was in, and from again 65 metres out, just a flick of the wrist and the ball just flew over the bar. 6 points in play, like especially in the first half, it was a real tight game. I thought Westmeath were excellent. They brought a huge work rate to the forwards. They played more or less just two inside Alan Devine and Robbie Greville, and they worked their arse off. And but any opportunity Killian Doyle could get, he just split the post, and he was out, and his freeze obviously. Place balls, he scored 11, I'd say it was about 11 out of 12, I think it was, I counted, or 11 out of 13, so just brilliant free taking as well. And I said it in commentary the other day, if this was Patrick Horgan or this was Joe Hanning, we'd be all eulogising about how good his performance has been. He has been shooting the lights out, as you said. Like, he had, I think it was 223 going into that game, he scored 17 points, like, you know, that's 240. Like, that's some going in three games. Like it's at centre forward, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's serious going. Like, and this lad's not that old either, you know. So, you know, he's at the top of his game, and you can just see he's just playing exceptional well.
And is he playing that centre half forward role where he's drifting all over the field like TJ, or is he working, or what way does he play?
He holds it more or less. Yeah, no, he'll get across the lines. Don't get me wrong, he's not just completely standing in the centre, but you know, he is a more traditional style centre forward, but he's working hard too. He drops deep when he needs to. He gets in, he gets out. It's exactly what you want from a centre forward.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. You were down in Páirc Cáev, JJ, with Sky. Alan Cadigan, 1-2. Was he the pick of the bunch, or who was impressing you then?
Again, Patrick Horgan was brilliant again.
Ah, look, we can't listen. We're going to have to ban some of these lads
every week. But I thought Mark Holland was brilliant, wing back.
Right, he's back in
brilliant,
form.
Brilliant
too.
On the ball. And Darragh Fitzgibbon, them two guys, especially Darragh Fitzgibbon, ran the show again. They said the other night, now he's closest thing to Michael Fenley now that is out there at the moment. He's tall, he's athletic, and he's able to score as well. Very economical on the ball there as well. Seamus Harney was very good there too, to be fair, but it probably on the Waterford side then, Bennett's brothers were very, very good now, and they're throwing in a lot of tackles.
Stephen finally got his back.
He got the flick in. Yeah. He missed the kick there in the first half, or I think, all right. And but he had a couple of half goal chances in the first 10 minutes. If Waterford had got that, it could have been a small bit different. But you were expecting what was going to happen, and it did in the last 10-15 minutes. Cork just pulled away, you know. But in fairness to Waterford, kind of went with the younger lads, and they worked very, very hard, and they're working for each other really more than that. And Conor Prunty now was kind of caught for the goal, but he had a good game overall, you know. But Cork side now, again, you're saying, but the Cork have a couple of problems as well. The full back line wasn't great. Bennett's caused a lot of problems in there. And when they pulled Cadigan out of the full back line, bring him out the field, he wasn't too comfortable either, to be fair. Niall Leary didn't have one of his better games, to be honest.
Right, and he'd played well the last couple of games,
but with what went up there...
He got opened up in the first 5 minutes, though.
Like, he hit hard,
hits in the first half, I tell you. Willie, I thought they'd be wanting to talk about points. By Jesus,
right.
he opened up two of them with shoulders. Yeah, Leary was coming out the ball, poor control, but... By Jesus, Shane Bennett nearly put him into the middle of next week. And then something similar then, I think it was Mark Ellis, he got a yellow card for that one. He caught him in the chest, but Jesus, he was putting his body in the line now. Two savage hits.
Yeah, I think they got 2-10 out of the total or something, did the Bennett brothers together. They probably needed that, like, because I thought they'd been flattering to deceive.
Even before the game, though, it's interesting to see, even for the Aaron Levine, all the Waterford lads went over to the sideline, over to Páirc Fanning, the whole panel were standing at the sideline.
Really?
Whereas the Cork lads were obviously the 115, they were in a row looking out at the flag. But something interesting to see there, you probably mightn't have seen off camera, like, you know what I mean? But they all kind of got
a show of unity, very good.
Which is good to see too, you know.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, do you think Cork are back? Like, obviously, in the first game, Fitzgibbon Coleman were very disappointed. Mm. They're, for such young lads, they're the heartbeat of the team. Yeah. Lehan came in, like, will he get back in the next day? Are Cork looking like they're back in good shape, do you think? Or it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell that Saturday night, but it has. Have a couple of questions they have to answer from the other night that they didn't probably thought they didn't have to have. They thought they had the full back line settled, but which is probably a good thing going into the match next weekend as well. But half back line, no problem. Midfield, again, no issues there whatsoever. The forwards are working very hard and moving very, very much around the kind of circles as well. And Seamus Hardy was in the studio as well there after the game, and he explained it very, very well, like, that he wasn't going to stand toe to toe with Ty DeBurca. He was going to go out the wing for the puck out, and if Ty DeBurca was out, he's leaving the whole centre free. If he doesn't come out, then I have an opportunity to score a couple of points, which he did get off puck outs as well.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting to see that way. But Aidan Walsh kind of tried hard but didn't do a huge amount. Now he'll start the next day as well, but I don't know, will Lehan come back in now? You know what I mean?
Has to start though, right?
But then but you have your two half forwards, Luke Mead, Daniel Carney. They won't.
Carney starts.
They will definitely start. But Luke Mead definitely starts
as well,
because they'll come back down the field. They do the exact same as the two Limerick half forwards. Then you have Harney, centre forward. Cadigan scored, probably 1-2 or 1-3.
He starts.
Horgan is the definite.
Lehan versus Walsh then.
Yeah. Right. Do you take a score or do you take a guy that's going to win the ball? And Aidan Walsh brings, it takes a lot of pressure off Harney when the ball goes long. He's good in the air, so he breaks a lot of ball for the likes of Lehan or Cadigan or Horgan as well. Whereas if he's not there, you're relying on James Harry to win every puck out.
We can't let the man that sent you packing from wing back to full back.
I'm trying to get him off the team now. Took a long time, but I'm getting him back now.
Did you know this, Brian? It was Lehan that sent JJ from wing back. It wasn't a great move by Cody. He had to get rid of JJ off that wing.
It was more my legs putting me back in full back now.
I think we've been a bit modest there. But come here, actually, on a complete side point, did you notice Daniel Carney went down with cramp again? His calves were cramping up, and it was the same in the All-Ireland semi-final last year. Now, I know he does serious movement and he's all over the place and he never stops running, but I wonder, is there more to it with that? Is he actually carrying a problem with his calf injury, or what is the story there? Because he was going down around the 55th minute, like there's still a bit of time to go yet, like on Saturday evening, so it was interesting from that perspective.
Yeah, no, definitely was. Right, listen, TJ Reid's won this so many times, I usually would give it to TJ for that phenomenal performance. So it's between Cottle Mannion and Killian Doyle here, lads, and I go
with Killian Doyle.
I don't think players
like this get enough recognition, and in fairness to him, I think he's been absolutely shit hot for the last three games for Westmeath, and you know that's why they have a chance now of making this Joe McDonagh Cup, so I think he should get it.
Yeah, okay, well listen, I'll take your advice on that. Killian Doyle, 17 points and 240 in three games. Jesus, what more does a man have to do? There'd be war in Westmeath hurling if we don't give it to this man. So right, well done, Killian. We'll be back. I think we're going to do a show on Wednesday this week because we have a live football show in Roscommon on Thursday night.
More football again.
We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.